This episode is brought to you by BundleRabbit.com, Earth's most accessible book bundling marketplace.
Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer. I'm the author of some 27 books, 34 short stories, and numerous articles and scripts and essays, and I am your guide on this journey to raise your productivity to pulp speed levels and to explore the cracks and crevices of business and craft in the writing life. Welcome back to The Everyday Novelist. Sorry about the technical difficulties that kept us away for a couple of days. In that time, I have experienced a new phenomenon on the East Coast known as sudden autumn. I've never been anywhere where you can literally have 80 degrees during the day and 77 degrees at night, be baking, working outside in the sun, and wake up the next morning to 50-degree weather and 40-degree nights. Literally, 12 hours between summer and fall. You guys on this coast are strange with your weather. But I am enjoying the backwoods and all the construction that goes with it, so I guess I can't complain too much, and the cooler temperatures mean the mosquitoes are dying. Anyway, today we have feedback. A couple of weeks ago, we did an episode on apocalypses in progress, which has generated a few interesting notes, because I did ask at the end of that episode for you if you had heard of or read a novel that dealt with an apocalypse in progress, which is a fairly rare breed, to send it in so that those of us who are interested in this very rarefied genre niche can explore it a little more fully. And you guys have delivered. For example, Roland says,
regarding the issue of apocalypse in progress and why there are so few of these novels, I appreciated your take on the lack of novels taking place during an apocalypse. I think the ones that we like take the blame out of our hands or place it with a clear villain, although I think 9/11 took some of that away too. The Stand, Lucifer's Hammer, and Footfall are stories that I loved. WMD Gone Wrong, Comet Problems, and Aliens in these stories. I also really enjoyed Jerry Purnell's War World series of short story and novella collections, which took place on the planet Haven before, during, and after the invasion by man's own super soldier creations. I think indie sci-fi has more today. Ed Robertson's Breakers is an example where things start during the early stages of the apocalypse, but the blame for the apocalypse goes to outside hands.
Good recommendations all. I will add them to my reading list, as I have not read any of them. Though, as you were talking about, that's not true. I did read The Stand, and let me rephrase. I tried to read The Stand, but you guys know my feelings about Stephen King and his general unreadability, which is entirely a personal notion and is obviously not an opinion shared by most people in the world, or at least most of the reading public. But, other than that, I don't think I've read any of those, so they're definitely going to be making it onto my personal reading list. As you were talking about the issue of blame, it occurred to me that you might be wrong about that. I mean, it's an interesting take, but I want to push back a little bit by pointing out that the vast majority of apocalypses that are possible, the vast majority of apocalypses that have happened, are not the fault of the people who experience them. The Great Bronze Age civilizational collapse was the result of four or five different waves of catastrophic events all hitting in succession over an 80-year period. The Great New World apocalypse that the American Indians experienced was the fault of some escaped pigs. Long before the Europeans actually came to make war on them, they died off by about 90%. The Black Death was nobody's fault in particular. That came in on the fleas on the Mongolian horses. And if you listen to the song All Along the Watchtower, the Bob Dylan song, that's a song about an apocalypse impending. It's actually taken from a verse in the Bible about an impending apocalypse. And the feeling that it captures is very accurate to the way that apocalypses used to happen in the world of city-states, which is that over the horizon, you'd see the scouts riding in, and you'd get somewhere between a few hours and a few days' warning that there was an army approaching. They were intending to sack and burn down the city, and the city would either empty out or it would lock up tight, and the people inside would either starve to death or evacuate, and either way, the city-state would undergo a massive setback, if not a complete destruction. And the kinds of apocalypses that are possible, tsunamis, earthquakes, meteor strikes, which you did mention, cosmic ray bursts, from the very, very likely tsunamis and earthquakes that are big enough to seriously disrupt civilization on this planet, volcanoes like Krakatoa, to the highly unlikely, like cosmic ray bursts, to the we don't know quite how likely they are, but they're probably a lot more likely than we want to think of, like meteor strikes. Most of the universe and most of the world is out of our hands. Those of us who live in the West, and especially in America, live in the world's only superpower, and it is very easy to fall under the delusion that we actually control what goes on in the world. But that's not really the case. We've got a vast amount of power as a nation state, but it's not unlimited, and we've seen one setback after another because our leaders keep making the mistake thinking that it's unlimited. So the notion that the apocalypse could be our fault, in terms of collective guilt, really only applies to certain species of environmental apocalypse, and that's only been in the popular consciousness since really the mid-1970s. There were rumblings of it before then, but really the 1970s is when that whole way of viewing the apocalypse sort of picked up steam. So, I don't know that we don't have more apocalypses in progress because we just like the apocalypses that we're not responsible for, as much as it's much easier to write apocalypses that we're not responsible for, and it's more viscerally terrifying. And that's a hell of a hook for the audience, because you get into the Lovecraftian cosmic horror, the idea that the universe is big and vast and old and doesn't give a damn about us. That's far, far scarier than the notion that we might get in a political tiff and someone might push a button and launch nukes like you have in On the Beach and The Day After. Or that we might pump enough carbon dioxide into the atmosphere to trigger massive disease outbreaks or a new ice age. Both of which would be sort of slow-motion apocalypses happening over the course of centuries. So the notion of an apocalypse for which we are responsible is an interesting one, and it gets explored a lot in the press, but I don't remember a lot of books where it gets explored, and it would be interesting to see. And of course, civilizational breakdown does take a long time as well, and that's another kind of apocalypse for which we could be said to be responsible. But I don't know if the lack of responsibility is really a key to the appeal, as much as it's the transverse, the great cosmic horror that the world might fly apart and only a few will survive. There's a sense of looking into the abyss that comes with that, and looking into the abyss is one of the things that fiction does for us. It allows us to do that safely. And there is the survivorship fantasy, the notion that I'm going to be the one that survives, or I'm going to live vicariously through the one that survives and be the heroic fellow that rebuilds civilization, which itself is a kind of fantasy that seems a lot less likely now than it did 100 years ago, not because of the technological sophistication of our civilization, but because we've had 100 years of anthropological study and we've found out that there is a critical number of people that are required to maintain any technological civilization, even if it's a Stone Age civilization. Because you need that many people to specialize and to preserve the kinds of knowledge that it takes to survive and prosper as opposed to just eking out a living. And so where 100 years ago it seemed plausible that a lone family on an island, or even 50 years ago seemed plausible that a lone family on an island might be able to make it work and sort of restore civilization Swiss Family Robinson style and carry on and repopulate the earth, now it seems a lot less likely. Over the course of a couple of generations, as the population falls below, I think it's 1,500 people that it takes, 1,500 really specialized people. Once you fall below that number, you start to lose knowledge in a way that can't be regained. Having books, of course, helps. but it only helps to a certain extent. Anyway, that just all occurred to me as you were talking. You've opened up an interesting rich vein for exploration, and you've reminded me of another Apocalypse in Progress novel that I had forgotten about, which is one that deals with an apocalypse for which we could be said to be responsible, at least on a civilizational basis, and that is The Day of the Triffids. But who wrote The Day of the Triffids? Now I can't remember. I can't believe I have forgotten the author of The Day of the Triffids. But Day of the Triffids, fantastic apocalypse in progress. Lots of fun. Really well written. And as hokey as it is, remains kind of terrifying. It was an exemplar of a genre that I think it was Aldous Huxley called it the cozy catastrophe. Because it's got all that great British sensibilities of a cozy mystery combined with a complete civilization-destroying, deeply depressing apocalypse. It's a really funky mix of genres, but totally worth your time. Anyway, we have some more feedback on this. This one comes from Ed, who adds,
one recommendation to add to your apocalypse happening reading list, Lucifer's Hammer by Niven and Purnell.
Well, that's two votes for Lucifer's Hammer, so definitely at the top of my reading list, and we will compile this reading list and put it on a subsection of the website in case you guys want to come back and refer to it. That is everydaynovelist.com. We are at the time of the year where questions are thin on the ground. This happens every year about this time because people are going back to school. But if you have questions, please do send them in. I'm running a little thin on them, and this block is only going to be 6 or 7 episodes long for that reason. Hopefully, I will keep it going because you heroic people will send in more questions or topics for conversation. Because that's another thing we could do, is we could have conversations here now that Kitty is joining me every time we record. And that could be a lot of fun, too. Thank you very much, Roland and Ed, for sending the recommendations and the thought-provoking comments in. I can't wait to hear what you think next time. And until then, I'll see all of you tomorrow. The Everyday Novelist is written and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. The text is copyright 2018 by J. Daniel Sawyer, and the production is copyright 2018 Artistic Whispers Productions. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License, and all other rights are reserved to their respective owners.